Accession number 17986, Reel 3.
Mr. Boston, Reel 3.
Yes, D Flight was situated on the far side of the airfield, and there was no transport for flight commanders, so I had to carry my parachute right round the perimeter track to D Flight, which consisted of a Nissen hut in the usual way, a flight commander's office at one end, a crew room in the middle, and a flight engineer's office at the other end. So I went into the flight commander's office, where there were kind of a couple of easy chairs, a filing cabinet, a desk or table, and I chucked my parachute into one of the easy chairs, and I went round to see the flight engineer and make myself known, and talked to him and discussed things with him. And then I went into the crew room, where there was one sub-lieutenant, you see. All the pupils were Fleet Air Arm. There was a sub-lieutenant who told me that he wasn't flying because his instructor had gone off sick. So being a kind of friendly type, I said to him, right, go and start that Harvard over there, and I'll go and get my parachute and come with you and see what you can do, you know. He obviously wanted to fly. So I went to my office to pick up my parachute. But there were two easy chairs, and I hadn't noticed when I went in there was a black and white spotted dog in the other one. Now, that dog would not let me get near that parachute. And this chap was in the Harvard with the engine running. I couldn't get near. So I went round to the flight sergeant, to the engineer's place. I said, who the hell does that black and white spotted dog belong to in my office? He said it belongs to the Queen Bee. I said, who the hell's the Queen Bee? He said, Flight Officer Wood. I said, where can I get Flight Officer Wood? So I got Flight Officer Wood, and I told her that unless she moved that dog from my office within 2 minutes, I would cure it. She said, what do you mean, cure it? I said, I will administer 1 ounce of lead just behind its left ear with my .38. Well, of course, she didn't appreciate that at all. And the deputy flight commander had been looking after the dog for her. And he didn't know I was coming, of course. So relations were very strained. As I walked into the mess, she would walk out. It didn't worry me at all in those days. And then eventually the unit was moved from Errol to... it's probably in there. Yes, moved to Turnhill, which was number 5 PAFU. And we were number 9 PAFU, and we were taking over 5 PAFU. It was going to become 9 PAFU. And so there was an us and them situation. They resented us. And we were all of it. So anyway, one Christmas, there was a Christmas party, and I was crowned, you see, and... Mary being one of my subjects, she had to pay homage, and that's how we got talking and eventually married. I've been married ever since.
Could I just go back to North Africa and read you one or two of things out of your logbook, which you haven't mentioned, which may bring back any memories of it? You've said right at the beginning, in November 1942, when... you've written air support to invasion of French North Africa, and you've written flying as CO's number 2. But then you've written, sighted a formation of 8 JU-88s, attacked one, observed hits, and last saw it streaking for the deck in flames and crashing in sea.
Yes, I don't remember that. I can't remember much about the detail because it was, you know, things were a bit hectic. And I remember hitting it, and I remember going in the sea. I fortunately was seen by other pilots of the squadron, so was confirmed.
And what in general was your attitude towards the enemy air force in North Africa? Is there any hatred, or was it respect, or what?
Well, it was respect for their flying ability, generally. But, you can't say we were very friendly, because they were trying to shoot me down and I was trying to shoot them down. They were trying to kill me, if you like, and I was trying to kill them. As a matter of fact, there's another on the same subject. At the 50th anniversary of the Spitfire coming into RAF service, I was at Duxford, and I was at the bar waiting to buy a drink. When there was they'd invited the Luftwaffe Fighter Association, and I was talking to this German pilot, and he said, "You and I were probably shooting at each other over the Channel in the 1940s." I said, "We might have been." I said, "But there's one thing fairly obvious." And he said, "What's that?" I said, "We both missed." No, I've no... now, of course, they were just doing the same job as we were. My personal feelings, it was aeroplanes I was shooting at, not people.
Another entry you've got here for the 24th of November in North Africa, you've put disastrous effort. My number two, Jeff Parker, crashed on takeoff, pretty badly hurt. I ran out of petrol at 11,000 feet above cloud, but managed to carry out wheels down landing on aerodrome.
Yes, it was this lad was a young pilot. I was a section leader then. He was a young pilot, and we took off on what they call Sommerfeld tracking on the sand, which was basically like reinforcing wire laid onto the sand to stop the aeroplane sinking in, of course. And we took off two together, and I saw the corner of my eye that he shot. He obviously ran off the wire into the sand, and it was a flamer. It burst into flames, and I saw this as I kind of flew round. But we were going on what they called a base and harbour patrol. We tried to maintain two aeroplanes over the base and harbour all daylight hours, because we were being shot at attacked quite frequently. And so I carried on to do the patrol by myself. Now, a Spitfire has two petrol tanks, one above the other, the bottom tank holding 37 gallons, and it's the only tank with a gauge on. The top tank ran into the bottom one, you see. And, of course, the Form 700, which you would normally use, where whoever refuels the aircraft has to sign it and all this, they were just not used at all. There was no time and no possibility of using all that sort of paperwork. And, of course, you check the fuel, press the petrol gauge, shows full. And it was, of course, wasn't. It was only half full, because the top tank was virtually empty. And watching this aeroplane crash on takeoff, and then I was doing this patrol on my own. I'd got the Atlas Mountains to the south of me, and the sea to the right of me, and the Germans to the east of me, and the engine stops. And I thought, well, what do I do? If I bail out, where am I going to finish? I'd no idea. So I decided the best thing to do was to take a chance and put the nose down. I knew it was clear from about 2,000 feet. So I took my nose down and closed my eyes, hoping I didn't hit the Hatteras Mountain, and came out right over the top of the airfield. Just, on the downwind leg, actually, if you want to say that. So I just plopped the wheels down and landed it, which was very much appreciated, because we were very short of aeroplanes. And, should normally have landed with the wheels up, because you do far less damage, if you land with the wheels up than you do if you land with the wheels down and turn it over on its nose. Anyway, I thought I was in a just ideal position, so I put the wheels down and managed to make a reasonably good landing on without damaging the aeroplane at all, which was appreciated. But unfortunately, I did find out afterwards that the other aeroplane had decapitated about six Pioneer Corps who were working at the edge of the runway when he ran off. He was killed, of course.
And another entry, November the 28th in North Africa, you've put jumped 8 JU-88s alone, attacked the leader, guns jammed, but I damaged him, then forced him into the sea by repeated attacks. Another confirmed. Any recollections of that?
I remember it very well because the guns jamming were a bit. It happened to me once or twice. I had been hitting him. I think it was probably a bit of an exaggeration to say forced him in the tea report. I kept pretending to attack him, but I'd obviously hit him and there was glycol pouring out of the engines, so I had to go down anyway. I think that's all I could really say about that one. There was another one that I don't know whether it's reported in there, but I was doing this base and harbour patrol again with another replacement pilot when we spotted six aeroplanes, twin-engined aeroplanes, which I didn't recognise, approaching the heading towards Bone, the base. So I called up and said, look, we have six bandits, scramble everything. And they scrambled everything. And they were Fiat BR-20s. And our guns jammed again then.
Yes, you put that entry, I think, is December the 1st. You put intercepted 11 Fiat
BR-20s. Fiat BR-20s, yeah.
At 11,000 feet, shot one down in flames. Three of crew bailed out and landed in drink. None were picked up. Two job hit in engine, you've put?
Yeah, I just had a... It didn't stop me flying, but...
Another entry here is 31st of December. You've put aerodrome bombed and strafed, panicky day, duff and pucker. What does that mean?
Well, I can't really remember. I do. At this time, the kind of sergeant's mess, which we were in, was a farmhouse at the end of the airfield. We shot at you. We're being scrambled all the time. It's difficult to record every little item. And anyway, I managed to finish my, and I got back to this place, and I'd found an old tin bath in this farmhouse. We hadn't had our clothes off, you know, since the 8th of November, since we left Gibraltar. You know, just not undressed at all. In fact, originally we slept under the wing of an aeroplane that had belly flopped. But when we were at Bone, we'd got this farmhouse, and I'd found this tin bath, which I'd filled with water, which I'd heated on an old fireplace in a 4-gallon petrol tin, and got myself a reasonably warm bath. I stripped off, and I was in this bath, and it was gorgeous when there was the worst air raid I think I'd ever been in. Bombs were dropping all over the place, incendies and high explosions. The farmhouse was hit. All the ceilings came down into me in the bath. And I put on my tin hat, my Irving jacket, and my flying boots, nothing else. Bare. Went outside. And it was like daylight with incendiary bombs. And I'd found in the house a metal, what you call them, gazunders, you know, the thing they used to tow it under the bed. And I was putting these over incendiary bombs, putting them out, and then the high explosive things came along. And I saw a big wall. I thought, I'm going to lie down by the side of this wall, and it'll be the safest place to be. And I lay down inappropriately dressed along this wall. And anyway, when it died out down, I went back and salvaged what we could out of the house in the way of our kit, and managed to get enough clothes to cover me up. The next morning went out looking, and what I had been lying against for protection was a stack of petrol in cans. It came in 4 gallon tins, two in a cardboard case, and these were stacked up like a wall. That was my protection, was thousands of gallons of 100 octane petrol. I must admit, used a few of my cat's lives.
Another date here is, I think, the 1st of January. You've put no oxygen at 27,000 feet. Shaky do.
This was really because Raspberry and I, it was the two of us, went up on doing this base and harbour patrol, and we went up high. Raspberry liked to fly high. And we're on the oxygen, and all of a sudden, we were on oxygen, obviously, from 14,000 feet up. And all of a sudden, I began to feel a bit queer. And the next thing I remember, all the canopy was steamed up, and the altimeter going like this. I was going straight down. I'd passed out with the lack of oxygen, and managed to pull it out. And I think if I remember rightly, I belly flopped it in a marsh, a marshy sort of land near the airfield.
What had happened to your oxygen supply then?
Hadn't been replaced. This was the trouble there. You see, there was no. We hadn't got our own ground crews. We'd got these servicing commandos who, they did a fantastic job, but it wasn't, we didn't have three, crew looking after your aeroplane, and that was that. They did anything. And obviously the oxygen had been used, and whoever had flown the aeroplane before had not reported that the oxygen supply had been used, and they hadn't changed the bottle.